This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We've got a very good show. We're continuing our coverage of how the community is reacting to COVID-19 and offering you some help and advice on the mental health side of the equation. What services are available? What issues might you or members of your family or other loved ones be facing in light of what our society is going through with COVID-19? And then later on, we're going to get outside, get dirty a little bit, and talk about some gardening. That's all coming up today on Newsmakers. I'm joined right now by two people to begin our mental health conversation. Dr. Katie Fassbinder is a psychiatrist. She's the medical director at the Western Region Integrated Care. It's a tri-county consortium, including La Crosse County, Jackson County, and Monroe County. I'm also joined by Jeff Ryland, who's a child and family therapist at Gunderson Health System. Thank you both for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Good to be here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. So let's get started by just broad strokes. And I know this could go, we could talk for hours about this, but just in pretty broad strokes, are there particular mental health challenges that people may be facing in light of COVID-19? Jeff, let's start with you.
I think that for people that already had mental health struggles, this may have added some stress to their plate. And for people that perhaps were doing okay, this has certainly added stress to their plate. So I really think that this COVID-19 crisis has affected everyone in that way, but to varying degrees, depending on what they had prior to this crisis happening and what their support networks look like.
So we could be seeing, this could be just heightening the need for mental health services for some people that might already have been in some amount of trouble. Katie, are there particular issues that might be exacerbated or feelings that people might be experiencing related to COVID-19?
Certainly. We are seeing folks that struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder have an exacerbation of their symptoms, more nightmares, potentially flashbacks, generalized anxiety, troubles during the day. We're seeing people have struggled with sleep. I think I can include myself, especially when this first started, just trying to keep up with things. Sleep is harder to come by, more depression and anxiety for individuals. Another area that we see people really struggling is with addictive disorders. So this is associated with an increase in use, and that certainly is a challenge for people in recovery.
When you mentioned PTSD, I was thinking of just the heightened stress that people who already knew that they had that type of condition might be under here. But how likely is it that somebody who might not have experienced that before might not have known that they had that before might be experiencing some of those difficulties for the first time related to this?
That's a great question. And I think it's one that's yet to be answered. But I do think that there is a collective trauma that we're experiencing, and then also at the individual and the family basis, when basic needs aren't being met, when people are being forced into situations that they couldn't have fathomed, they feel that their very livelihood is at risk, their ability to keep afloat among all kinds of challenges that are completely out of their control. I do think we're going to see some acute stress responses, and depending on the individual's kind of predisposition or what they bring to the table in terms of their risk factors and their resilience abilities, I think we are going to see the onset of new mental health issues like post-traumatic stress for some individuals going through this.
Jeff, there's some things that I was thinking of in terms of the different categories of experiences, that mental health related experiences that people might have related to COVID-19. And there's no real rhyme or reason to this, but in my mind, I thought of one major category being fears related to the illness itself, the spread of it. Could I get it? Could I pass it on to other people? And then there's a whole other set of feelings related to the separation and the isolation that we're all kind of going through right now, which is, I think, something that all of us on some kind of level can relate to. Let's talk about the fear side of the equation as far as managing my concerns about whether I or someone I love could get the illness or something like that. How do people know when they just have a naturally occurring healthy fear of something that could happen and when that is rising to the level that it is really becoming a consuming obsession with them?
I think that there's a number of things that people can consider there, because certainly when you hear national figures, scientists telling us that we need to take precautions, we need to do proper hand washing and keep our social distance, there's a difference between social distance and social isolation. And I think that many people are feeling both, and one is maybe the result of the other. It doesn't have to be that way, but I think that there are many people that are struggling with anxiety associated with potentially getting sick or making their loved ones sick if they become carriers of this illness and they're not even aware of it. I think one of the litmus tests, if you will, in determining if it's a problem is it getting in the way? Is it causing difficulties with sleep? Is it causing difficulties with functioning in relationships? Is it creating stress? It's good to have a healthy fear, or, if you will, respect for the proper hand washing and other things that we can be doing, wearing masks or out in public, those kinds of things. But if it's keeping us from doing things that we have to do that are essential for our relationships and for functioning, then that may be spilling over into having a problem.
Katie, what about that isolation, that separation that people are experiencing now? How can somebody maybe think about that in a positive or at least proactive way to kind of help them avoid some of the more extreme kinds of problems that could come from a prolonged period of social isolation?
That is such a critical point of focus for the work that Jeff and I do in mental health, is ensuring that people don't experience prolonged isolation. Many people have heard of a study done by Harvard. It's been going on for some 75 or 80 years that showed relationships are the single most important predictor of a person's happiness. And so we're really trying to promote creative ways of connecting that maybe people haven't used lately or maybe haven't experienced at all. So for my kids, for example, the youth that I work with, I'm having them write snail mail, write a letter to your grandparent, you know, write a letter to your friend, put a stamp on it and put it in the mail. Receiving a letter is so powerful. For people who are more comfortable with that, I'm challenging them to try a FaceTime or a Zoom meeting or, you know, video conferencing, and, you know, keep up with emails and phone calls and the things that do help us feel connected. I think that is going to be really critical for ensuring that we get through this.
Let's talk about, I introduced this segment by talking about COVID-19 as it relates to mental health or mental well-being. And those are terms that people don't want to place on themselves lightly. There's still quite a stigma attached to the idea that I, as an individual, might need help with my mental health, or even people, you know, realizing that they have mental illness or something like that. What kinds of things fall into the category of mental illness? And is that the correct kind of language to talk about these things, or what language might be more helpful?
First, I think that we need to acknowledge that we all have mental health, just like we all have physical health, and we can go a step further and we all have social health, that we all have aspects of ourselves that we have to be aware of, and we do have a stigma that we have been slowly shrinking, I think, in our society around mental health and around addiction both. But it takes time, and it's hard for people to see that. A crisis like this really does bring it to focus and helps us all to appreciate that we're all in this together, and we all have to become more aware of those similarities that we have. Some people maybe ride higher in the water of a flood than others because they might have more going for them. They might have they might still have their jobs. They might have a better safety net or a better support network. Maybe they don't have those pre-existing problems that were already burdening them before this crisis occurred. My hope is that people are open to supporting one another and hearing that mental health is very real, and it's no different than any physical disease, except it carries a stigma with it maybe I would even say it carries a stigma that cancer carried 20, 20, 30 years ago. But we're certainly moving in the right direction with moving beyond that. And this crisis may help us to do that.
Katie, what about the terms that we use to talk about these things?
Well, I would agree and echo what Jeff has already said. I think that it's really useful to take note of something that I actually saw pretty recently on the Center for Disease Control, the CDC's website, that talked about after a disaster, that the psychological trauma can exceed the physical injury by a factor of 40 to 1. So if you happen to be experiencing some psychological distress, and that can come in the form of there's a little less spring in your step. You're just not as happy or as motivated. It can come in the form of your appetite is changing. You're eating more. You're eating less. Your sleep isn't as good or as sound. Or it could be more severe where you're having actual anxiety attacks. You're feeling kind of crippled with fear and having struggles functioning day to day and kind of holding it together for yourself or your family. I think it's important to recognize that the earlier we can intervene with those disturbances in one's mental function, the much better the outcome can be, and the suffering we can save someone from is so much greater. So, there's certainly labels, mental illness. You know, we have a diagnostic manual where we can try to understand if somebody meets criteria for a diagnosis, but being mentally healthy isn't just the absence of a mental illness. There's so much more that goes into that. And I think that we are at a time like no other to really promote mental wellness and really caring for oneself and recognizing that that's not self-indulgent, but that actually makes you more capable of being there for others as well. So detecting those things early is really key right now, and reaching out early.
One of the things that Katie was just mentioning, I think, is so critical earlier about relationships. That's really what we are focusing on. We don't have the distractions of sports. We don't have all the other things that used to take us away from our relationships. Now we're kind of able to really focus on that. And some people are going, oh my gosh, what do I do when I've been so distracted by other things for so long? And we can't do that. How do we reconnect, or how do we strengthen those connections with one another? And Katie's spot on, that's relationships that are going to carry the day, and how do we strengthen those and make those healthier?
And we'll talk about that as our conversation continues. That's Jeff Ryland, a child and family therapist for Gunderson Health System. Also with us this half hour, Dr. Katie Fassbinder, a psychiatrist, medical director of the Western Region Integrated Care. That's a tri-county consortium among La Crosse County, Jackson County, and Monroe County. We're continuing our conversation on Newsmakers today. We're going to find out, among other things, what next steps you should take if you think you might need help or if you think you might need to talk to somebody. That's coming up. If you'd like to learn more about our program or maybe stream past episodes on demand, you can do so on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Newsmakers does continue right after this on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern studios in La Crosse. We're talking today with Jeff Ryland, the child and family therapist, a child and family therapist at Gunderson Health System, and Dr. Katie Fassbinder, a psychiatrist with a Tri-County Care Consortium that's active in La Crosse County, Jackson County, and Monroe County. Thank you very much, Katie and Jeff, for joining us, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Good to be back.
We're continuing our conversation on mental health as it relates to COVID-19 and some of the issues that people might be facing. And one of the things that that I wanted to kick off this part of the conversation with is resources. If people acknowledge that they're having an issue, they really would like to talk to somebody to see how they can help their frame of mind or get the help, whether it's some kind of behavioral therapeutic thing or whether it might require some sort of medical intervention, getting the help that they need. Let's talk about resources, where people can go to start to find steps toward healing. Who wants to go first? Let's start with Katie this time. The first segment began with Jeff today. This time we'll start with Katie.
All right. So I know that a wonderful resource that is available 24/7 is obviously the internet. And the National Alliance on Mental Illness, also the acronym NAMI, N-A-M-I, if one is to Google that, they're going to find a wealth of information and resources specific to COVID, also specific to specific diagnoses or caring for family members or loved ones. So that is a wonderful resource. Another one that I would recommend is Mental Health America. It's if you Google Mental Health America, that brings up a website, and you can actually take screening tests for a number of different issues you may be struggling with, whether it be anxiety, depression, sleep disorder. And if your screening test yields, yes, you seem to be struggling with this, it will give you a list of ideas that you can do at home, also ways to connect with providers and even national resources that might be available. Another one that is a great entry-level thing to start with is reach out to your family medical doctor or provider, and a lot of those people will be able to be a gateway towards more specific mental health resources as a great entry point.
Jeff, what resources might you recommend to people who are looking into getting the help that they need?
I think that the internet is the best place to start because it is hard to get out and go places to find out more what's available. We had talked a little bit earlier about addiction, and I think one good place to start would be to check out Cooley Council on Addictions and find out what resources are available if you or a loved one is struggling with a substance use disorder or concerns that they might have one. I think more broadly, Great Rivers 211 is also a great resource in our Cooley region that has a lot of options for people, and they're probably more aware of what's available currently. I think they try to maintain resources that are active and current at the time. And so reaching out to those two places could at least give people some ideas about what's available. One of the challenges, I think, that there are differences from agency or from community to community as to what is available for people in terms of what they can access.
I know that, Jeff, you work for Gunderson Health System. I know there are other healthcare organizations active in our area. Just in general, I know you can't speak on behalf of all of them, but in general, are mental health services the kinds of things that you're seeing covered by insurance more and more, or is this something that people are more than likely going to have to come out of pocket with?
I think for a long time, mental health services have been covered by most insurances. The amount of coverage is different from insurance carrier to carrier, and I think that is a challenge. But I think that they're covered, and I also think that mental health providers have fairly quickly moved from seeing patients or clients face-to-face to providing care virtually or online, which is within a month, we're all there. And I think that's really a credit to our responsiveness to wanting to meet the needs of the community. Most people are able to get care. It's just not face-to-face right now.
Katie, you work with several different counties providing services, and I know from just knowing people who have interacted with those services in the past that there's a varying degree of people who have insurance versus people who don't have insurance. What kind of services might someone be able to receive if maybe a part-time worker who's been laid off and is facing mental health challenges, but certainly doesn't have resources to cover it?
That's a great question. So, and to speak to the question about resources, I should add each county has crisis resources. So if somebody is having a mental health crisis, if they were to contact their local county human services, they would be able to find the number to the crisis line. And there's even some texting lines available for people who prefer to text. So I do want to add that. In terms of accessing mental health care for individuals that are either without insurance or perhaps have Badger Care, Medicaid, and maybe can't get in very quickly in other places, each of the counties that I work in does offer a good number of mental health services. Depending on the county, there's therapy services, addictive disorder services. A few of them have psychiatric prescribers right on site there. And we work in conjunction with community partners. So if we do an intake for somebody and we triage their needs to include a resource that we don't have in-house, we'll help make referrals to a community resource to meet that client's needs.
We were talking a little bit before our conversation began officially about disparities in our healthcare system, and the definitely there are resources out there to help people who might not have care, but in a lot of cases we see in our area and across the country, it can be a little bit of the haves versus the have-nots in some ways if we're not aware of reaching out to people who might not have other means to procure the kind of care that they need. Jeff, how important is it to be mindful of and to reach out to those kinds of people who might fall between the cracks, or even to know who those people are?
I wish that we were doing, as a society, a better job at paying attention to that, and I hope that this crisis helps us to do that moving forward. Now, I believe that we're making effort here at Gunderson. When patients don't have access to Skype, we're saying phone calls are going to work. We're going to make that work, and that's really important for us to reach out to patients. For many weeks, we were just doing phone calls until we had our Skype up and running, and I think it was because we want our patients to stay healthy and to stay in a good place, or to get them to a good place. So providing those services is important, and just recognizing not everybody, especially in our rural communities, has internet access where they're able to use the internet like we may in larger cities have access or have that kind of internet speed that's critical for carrying some of the platforms for communicating.
Let's talk about coping with some of these issues. I don't want to diminish the value of this advice by calling it, you know, like quick tips or whatever. But if somebody is finding themselves consistently going to darker places, either out of fear or out of some experience of illness, or relating to the stress of fewer hours at work, or wondering how they're going to pay the bills, or trying to have, you know, all the kids home from school, and all these different things that tax our mental energy right now. What are some tips, some ideas for coping that you guys might present? Katie, we'll start with you.
Great. So I would say the first thing is to do a little bit of inventory and recognize what you can and cannot control. And what you'll find is that there are a lot of things in your control that you may not recognize without kind of doing this exercise. So just the day-to-day decisions about how you spend your time, the foods you choose, how you communicate with others, your sleep regimen. Are you moving? Are you exercising? Are you nourishing your mind with things other than the news? Those are things you get to control. And I think it's really important to try to dive into those things and find new meaning in those. One of the things I'm telling a lot of my patients who say, my mind is just racing. I feel paralyzed by these worries, and I lie down in bed at night and I can't turn my mind off. And I'll ask them, well, have you moved your body? Have you gone outside today and gotten some fresh air? And a lot of times they're saying, no, I'm kind of hunkering down and not really moving much. And I talk with them about just how critical it is to move your muscles, move your body. If you're not moving your body, your mind is going to be racing. So that's just a real fundamental tool that people really need to find ways to integrate. Another thing I talk with people about is doing things to boost their immune system so that if they did get exposed to this infection, that they'll go into it with a healthy body. And that includes minimizing the stress level you let yourself experience, eating good foods, getting good sleep, trying not to overdo things like alcohol. And that's really critical. And then the other area I spend a lot of time talking with individuals about is how to build resiliency. And there's proven strategies for how to do this. I think that we are all born with a certain temperamental, amount of resiliency that we come by naturally, but this is an area you can grow. And, kindness and generosity, towards others is a source of resilience. Being positive, not letting negative emotions destroy you. It's okay to have negative emotions. They're not wrong, but don't let them consume you. You know, learn from the challenges you're going through and allow those to be a way to discover more about yourself. And try to be, find humor. Find some lightheartedness wherever you can and find the silver lining wherever you can. So if there's parts of this experience that you can embrace as beautiful or helpful or nourishing, then do that and do it without, you know, with reckless abandon. Don't feel bad about it, having something enjoyable through this crisis also.
Jeff, what about you? Some tips for people who are trying to cope and may not need to see a professional right away, but who need some help getting their mind to focus on something less dark.
Yeah, this has been actually the fun part of my work is just listening to the stories that parents, kids, teenagers, families are sharing about the surprising joy that they have experienced in this dark time. Parents are talking about how they're connecting with their teenagers, playing board games that they haven't played for years. Even walking in our neighborhood, a family of young children had painted rocks, and my favorite rock that they had left, and a big chalk sign that said, "These are free, please take one." But one of them was, "What the world needs now is love, love, love." It's just the cutest thing. And whole communities are participating in bear hunts where people put bears in the windows and kids who are otherwise stuck at home can go on walks with their families trying to see how many bears they can find. So just little things like that, people can step out of their comfort zone and participate even if they can't touch other people, they can't get too close. We can connect with our neighbors. We can make a list of things we're grateful for, because even though this thing is horribly inconvenient and maybe devastating for many, it could be worse. And I think we need to step back and say, what is good? What about today is good? The sun is shining. My flowers are growing. I still have food in the refrigerator. What are the things about today that I'm grateful for? The people in my lives. In my life, who is it that I can reach out and make them smile today? So I think socially connecting is really critical, especially for families of children, having routines and structure, meal times, bedtimes, rituals to create throughout the day so that kids have little anchors that they can know this is what's going to happen. There's some predictability from day to day. Being creative, it has been so much fun to hear families talk about the creativity that has come out of this as they struggle with, okay, what do we do next? Because we don't want to spend all of our time on the internet, or we don't want to spend all of our time with video games. We need to do other things. Kids creating obstacle courses and mazes and coming up with forts and all kinds of things that they're trying to do to stay active and stay busy with their families. I think there's lots of possibilities, but the most important is to connect to others, is just to make sure that we are socially connecting to other people.
Well, that's a great way to draw our conversation to a close today, and I wish we had more time. I feel like we're just scratching the surface, but to end on a positive note like that is I think worth remembering for all of us, to connect to those people around us and those people we wish we could connect to physically. Maybe we can't for the time being, but we can find other ways to reach out to them and maintain that connection. We've been speaking today with Jeff Ryland, the child and family therapist at Gunderson Health System, Dr. Katie Fassbinder, a psychiatrist, medical director of the Western Region Integrated Care. That's a tri-county consortium between La Crosse County, Jackson County, and Monroe County. Katie, Jeff, thank you very much for the advice that you've given us today and for joining us on Newsmakers.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ezra.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. We're getting outside a little bit and talking about gardening. Going to get our hands a little dirty coming up in the next segment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to get outside a little bit, get our hands dirty, and do some gardening today on Newsmakers. And joining us to do that are Todd Huffman of the Cane Street Community Garden, which is a wonderful project of the Hunger Task Force of La Crosse, and Linda Vale, the market manager for La Crosse Farmers Market Association, which is pleased to be opening the Cameron Park Farmers Market downtown in La Crosse next weekend. So not this Friday and Saturday, but next Friday and Saturday. So I'm sure everyone is looking forward to that. Thank you both very much, Todd and Linda, for joining me today.
Thank you.
So let me start with giving each of you a chance to talk a little bit about your organizations and what they do, because a farmers market and community garden, both kind of in the same realm of that gardening, that freshly grown food, but both with slightly different purposes. Let's start with you, Linda. Tell us about the La Crosse Farmers Market Association and the different opportunities that you offer for people to experience freshly farm-grown produce.
Well, in past years, we've had over 65 vendors, 70% of that be produce and food vendors. We pride ourselves at the Cameron Park Farmers Market that we're an incubator platform for small business in the area. Many people, the farmers market is their next step from coming off the farm, from their farm stand to from selling, or even selling door to door or selling from their homes. We are that first step into maybe they graduate out of that into a brick and mortar, a store shop or a storefront. But we're there to build their client base. And because we bring through 2,000 people in a market weekend in La Crosse, we can have that exposure for them. So, we have a wide variety of vendors, food vendors and non-food vendors. Unfortunately, this year we've taken a bit of a hit from the COVID for our vendor roster. But, in past years, we've had over 65 vendors, these small businesses. We also provide in the park, we are a public park. We rent from the city. So it's kind of an open air marketplace. We provide teaching kitchens, food sampling, the library has services there, live music, weekly events like Bike Week, or sometimes we have yoga in the park. So it's definitely, in past years, it's been a wonderful, large weekly community gathering place. Any newsletters or emails that I send out, I always address it to my market family, because it's a wonderful connection point in our community where producers and consumers and shoppers can meet directly and build a relationship, and they build this trusting relationship between each other, knowing that we can trust the people to keep providing our families with this nutritious food, but then the vendors and the farmers can trust our community members to keep coming back each week to purchase these goods, to keep everybody in this reciprocal, healthy relationship.
Todd, tell me then about the Cane Street Community Garden. That's an outreach of the Hunger Task Force.
Yeah, we are there in the north side of La Crosse. It's on city land, and our community garden is different than some other ones you may have heard of where you get your own plot. There's no plots here, so it's just the community coming together to grow this food. And literally our goal is to raise about 30,000 pounds of food, and that would be given out primarily at the garden. Some people are surprised how big it is. It's like a small farm, I guess, in that sense. We're about to plant about 700 tomato plants once it warms up a bit, not with this cold snap. So
how big an area are you talking about? It's a garden in the northern part of the city of La Crosse. How big a space is it?
Yeah, we used to say it was like two city blocks or 2 acres, which is like 2 football fields in size. And also, you may have heard the city's doing this Victory Garden program. One of those will be in this new lot that we haven't gardened before on the edge of the Cane Street Community Garden. So from one end to the other, it's probably 800 feet.
Well, I definitely want to talk to each of you about how the COVID-19 situation is changing the way we live in community, especially with projects like yours. And we'll do that in a little bit. But first, I want to ask you, we'll start with you, Linda. What kinds of things can people see at at the farmer's market at this time of the year. We think about us having recently come out of winter, and maybe in our home gardens, not a lot is ready to be consumed yet. But what's available at the farmer's market?
Yeah, that's so true. Produce is limited this early in the season, especially what Todd's talking about with these cold snaps. I actually got a phone call from one farmer that said they've had to completely replant their fields because of that frost, the snow in April. So produce is limited. You have things, you know, like rhubarb and your strawberries, radish, some things like that. But we also have, you know, our meat products, eggs, maple syrup and honey, baked goods. And then we also have hot and ready food truck and takeout kind of things as well.
So as far as the people who bring things to the farmer's market, are all of these vendors from within Wisconsin or within the foods that they grow from within the area, or are these some of them, you know, bringing in things from other areas or have products shipped in from other climates?
Every vendor needs to come from within 100 miles from La Crosse. So it keeps it in the area, but it also opens it up to Iowa and Minnesota as well. In our vendor rules, all vendors need to grow, produce, or make or create all of their products that they sell. So that you're talking to the actual producer. It might be a family member sometimes, but yes, it's everybody's coming from their own farm.
So, Todd, you talked about hundreds of tomato plants. Tell me what else is either planted or being planted at the Cane Street Community Garden.
Well, we definitely are focused on the cold hardy things. We put in maybe 4,000 onion plants already, hundreds of broccoli, cabbage, kohlrabi, kale, collard greens, peas. We have an unheated high tunnel, which is like a tall hoop with a plastic, but no heat. And that one has had, we've been harvesting spinach since March.
And so that enables you to grow, it's not completely impervious to changes in the weather because it's not heated, but it keeps it in a condition where some of the more sensitive things can grow even when it's cold?
Yeah, we actually focus the entire... It's 30 by 48. It's entirely spinach because that is so cold hardy. And then we pick that in November and December. In a normal year, it would kind of die back and come back in March. But this year it was mild. There's just not a lot of bushels of it in January, but it was not killed at all. And all those other things I listed are outside. So with probable frost coming, you know, those are all cold hardy. We hope they make it. Doesn't get too cold on Friday night or something, but we'll hope for the best.
Time will tell.
We have not put out. I personally, if you're a gardener and you have tomatoes out there, and you know, a cage, like throw a blanket or a sheet over them, because for what we're hearing, Friday night will be very cold.
We're stepping outside and doing a little gardening on today's Newsmakers. I'm pleased to be joined by Linda Vale, the market manager for the La Crosse Farmers Market Association, and Todd Huffman of the Cane Street Community Garden, a project of the Hunger Task Force. Todd says that the Cane Street Community Garden is open for volunteers as of right now. Also, Linda says she's looking forward to the Cameron Park Farmers Market opening, not this weekend, but next weekend. We'll be back. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. I'm glad you've joined us today. I'm glad as well to be talking to Todd Huffman, the garden coordinator at the Cane Street Community Garden. That's a project of the Hunger Task Force of La Crosse. Also with us, Linda Vale, the market manager for the La Crosse Farmers Market Association. And we're talking about gardening in its various aspects. Todd, you're working with a garden that is run to a large degree by volunteers and which hands out its food into the community. And so talk about in light of COVID-19, some of the difficulties that your very very volunteer-driven public organization has had to undergo, some of those changes in light of the virus that we're all trying to steer clear of?
Some were even surprised we're open, but you know, food-related, food production is an essential business, you know, and this is an essential nonprofit. So we're similar almost to a UPIC farm, but the labor is volunteers. There's two staff there, but the rest, you know, even in, as far as unique visitors throughout the year, and typically you're over 1,000, you know, drop-ins at different times, and groups. All the school groups have been canceled. You know, we normally would have a lot of college groups that come and work, and so that's been a big change. And then we just want everyone to be safe. I guess your listeners have heard about the COVID-19, so we're working to implement, you know, what should be recommended. We do have a really awesome volunteer that is actually a medical student at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and she's really been researching, you know, what we need to do. And there's a lot of documents for like UPIC farms and such from the Department of Ag, but we're a little bit unique in that we have people coming and going. But I would say for sure it would involve, you know, hand washing and the social distancing. We don't have the big crowds because we're not in the big harvest time yet. So I feel like it's going to evolve a bit. But if anyone does come, you know, we're open for people to drop in and work as a volunteer. We would recommend a mask. We would recommend, you know, hand washing and then keeping your distance for starters. And then we're going to be working more detail when we get into that distribution. Then I feel we're really going to have
evaluating as you evaluating as the situation changes in the coming weeks. So, Linda, what about at the farmers market where you have maybe a higher volume of customers? What kind of precautions do you have to take?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had to change a lot of our layout and also our services. So, like our stall layouts for vendors, we're doing one direction foot traffic. We're also limiting. We're having a capacity now. As well. So we just have a one entrance point into the park to help us keep those counts. And we also have a volunteer workforce that's going to help us just give reminders for people to keep their distance. We promote masks and things like that for our vendors, our staff. But we also are providing hand washing stations in the park. So if you do a bit of shopping and just want to go and wash your hands, you have that opportunity. We're also encouraging shoppers to do their shopping efficiently. You know, come with a plan, come with a list, be ready to shop. You know, it's stay, enjoy the park, talk to your vendors, get to know your farmer, stay and enjoy the music, learn how to cook. But all of those types of services have been put on hold due to the virus. So, instead, we're just asking people, you know, like I said, to make a list, shop efficiently, stay home if you're sick. But then we're also offering an additional service to open the access. So since we have to limit the direct shopping at the market a bit, we're opening a pre-order curbside pickup. So some of the vendors, about 14 vendors to start, are participating in the program where you can go online and shop in a CSA box kind of fashion where all the vendors are offering a few different sizes of variety boxes of their products. So you can go online, fill your cart, pay online, and then you can come to the market and we'll have your order ready and you can just drive up and drive off. So that's helping the community members that are high risk, kind of giving them an option to still access the market goods, but not shop the market directly.
And what's the website where people would find that?
CameronParkMarket.org.
CameronParkMarket.org. You know,
and that will launch May 11th, so next Monday.
We've been hearing a lot about the whole vulnerability of the food chain as COVID-19 spreads across the country. And I know networking with local farmers, Linda, you're deeply involved in an issue like this, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are as sort of the difficulties that some of the large national organizations, particularly in meat processing, are having. What that's reminding us of in terms of the importance of supporting our locally based food chain.
Exactly. Well, first and foremost, if we don't support them now, they're not going to survive this, and they won't be here after this. So we need to start giving them our support each week so that they survive this health crisis. But then also, the food is coming directly from the farm to the marketplace. In a longer supply chain, every stop along the way is another chance for contamination. It's also another opportunity for somebody to take a bit of the cut of the profit off the top. If you're buying food from a larger industry grocery store, farmers are only making 30 cents on the dollar. If you directly shop directly from the market, vendors and farmers are making 80 cents on the dollar. And really, 70% of that goes straight back into the local economy. So keeping our funds local, supporting our neighbors and local farmers, and that's another part of it, is just it's keeping our food safer by reducing just the stops along the way, because it's just coming straight from the farm.
So people might wonder about the selection that's available at something like a farmer's market. You go into a grocery store and you have everything in the world at your fingertips. But I know that local providers have worked to increase the variety of products that they can offer. And now farmer's markets, you can get all kinds of different meats, vegetables, fruits. What are some of the things available at a farmer's market that people might not be aware of?
Well, for instance, we have a garlic farmer. She comes with garlic powders, different pickled garlic scapes, and then also her organic garlic. I think garlic is something you can get in a grocery store, but really, I mean, homegrown organic garlic is a horse of a different color, I like to say, as is most of the food, because that's another part of it, is these mass scales. You don't know if they're using pesticides, you know, all these things. But if you can talk to the farmer, you'll also know the quality of the product as well. Some other, for meat even, we have a bit of variety where we have a bison farmer. We also have a goat, beef, pork, and chicken that you can find at the market. We have a new vendor that's talking about bringing turkey.
So quite a number of things available at the local farmer's market. It may not be quite like going to a grocery store, but you also have the satisfaction of knowing that you're getting a really high quality product that is grown within miles of your home.
Exactly.
Todd, we talked about, you mentioned Victory Gardens earlier, and I wanted to make sure that we come back to that notion with people thinking about how they can be more involved in what's going on their plate. Let's say somebody has not been heavily involved in gardening before. What are a couple of tips or maybe a couple of easy things that they could try to grow to get started?
Sure. A bunch of people have asked me that recently. I would say try to grow what you like to eat. Potentially in a pot, you could grow big pot of cherry tomato, or you could sprinkle some spinach seed. Those would be fine. A kale plant. A zucchini is something that'll probably grow for you. You need a little bit of space and some sunny location for that one. But I kind of recommend a cherry tomato for starters, that you could buy a plant, at a garden center. Or actually, there's a program, multiple sites, including ours next week, are going to be giving out plants at their gardens. All next week, we'll have some extra tomato plants to give out and other things. Yeah, no, that Victory Garden thing I mentioned quickly, but you maybe heard the city of La Crosse has had, they're promoting some Victory Gardens around the city, and it goes back to World War II, where the government encouraged people to grow their own food.
Linda, we've just got a short amount of time left, but I wanted to give you a chance to tell us what's one of your favorite things to grow.
Ooh, good one. In our household, we like to grow tomatillos and make green salsa. So that's one of our big favorites.
That sounds fantastic. Huevos rancheros is one of my favorite things, and to have some salsa verde to put on it, I would love it. I would absolutely love it. Tell us where people can find out more about the La Crosse Farmers Market.
Yeah, CameronParkMarket.org. You can also follow us on Facebook. We're on Instagram. I put out a weekly newsletter as well that you can sign up for on our website.
Good. Todd, what about the Cane Street Community Garden? Where can people find information about it?
We have the website. If you Google for Cane Street Community Garden, it would be on the top, or a hunger task force of La Crosse. And basically, though, it'll show you the hours, which are 6 days a week, and you can come by during the day, and we're open Monday through Saturday.
We've been doing a little gardening on today's Newsmakers. I'm so pleased to have been joined by Todd Huffman of the Cane Street Community Garden, a project of the Hunger Task Force in La Crosse, and Linda Vale, the market manager for the La Crosse Farmers Market Association. Linda would like to let you know that the Cameron Park Farmers Market opens not this weekend, but next weekend. And Todd says Cane Street Community Garden still accepting volunteer hours now. So if you have some time to volunteer and an interest in learning a little about gardening, you can visit the Cane Street Community Garden. That's our show for today. I'm Ezra Wall. For my producer, John Davis, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers and then tune in next week for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.